This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome back to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm really hoping this only lasts through Halloween.
It's Jason, my friend.
What's up, guys?
Hello, Jason.
Hey, Sam. You done?
How are you?
Okay, well,
I
might be leaving.
We got another one-star review
this
week. This one said that we were too busy being comedians to talk about anything seriously. And I read that and I was like, ridiculous, stupid. And then as soon as I started doing that, that review just popped into my head. And I was like, oh, yeah, if they've listened to any of the episodes in the last two weeks, that's going to be the first thing right out of the gate is me doing stupid voices. And you know what? I don't care. I'm not sorry. I'm here, and I'm a Dracula.
Is that what that was?
I am a Dracular. So hi, great. Everybody.
I love how that's the comment, because we literally don't write any of it.
Our jokes are stupid.
It just happens.
They're stupid, spontaneous. They don't make any sense. Sometimes I will even write jokes in the notes, and almost always I get to them and I think to myself,
that sucks.
I just jump past it. And then we spend like
I've read
5
a few
minutes.
Of your puns. They're not.
And then we just spend time going off on a tangent.
Hey, which, look at that.
Look at, here we are. We're back in Tangent Town. My name is Sam Fredrickson. I am your host. That guy, his name's Jason Moitoso. He is your co-host. How you doing, everybody? Welcome to Spooktober. Jason, have you composed your Spooktober poem?
Sam.
You're Jason.
That's right. I am. Am I? I have not. I am not a poetry kind of person.
Wow.
I don't like them words. I like them pictures, remember?
Sure. You could also make...
I don't read good.
Some Spooktober... You don't have to read to write poetry.
I'm illiterate.
Whoa.
Can't write.
Okay.
Everything I do is through dictation.
That's interesting. I can't bring it back. I'm derailed. What was it?
Okay. Perfect.
Wait, Jason. You've got a week to come up. I'm holding you to this with a spooky October poem, because next week is our listener celebration special.
You know, I'm just going to Google it.
And I know...
I'm just going to rip it right off the internet.
That's fine. I know I told everybody that the cutoff was today, the 23rd. I don't care.
What?
You can... I mean, Sam, we're going to record the special on the 30th, next Tuesday. And so, like, honestly, just have stuff in by then. I don't know if I'll use it or not, but I don't feel... I just want everybody, if they want to contribute something, to do it. We've had a few more both fictional and non-fictional stories come forward. We haven't had anybody with like poems or songs, but that's fine. Might compose a wee little ditty myself. I won't. And I'm gonna make Jason
take some lines from Monster Mash.
There you go.
and just speak real slow about it.
There you go.
There's my poem.
But make sure that you send any fictional, non-fictional, poetry, prose, musical, not whatever, anything at all, to notalonepodstories@gmail.com, and we will probably most likely include it in our listener celebration that's going to be coming out on Halloween. Ooh, spooky. Now then... I'm so tired. I have to overdo it, because if I just act the normal amount of energy I'm feeling, it would just be a very monotone episode, and I would talk like this for 45 minutes, and then I would take a nap.
I don't think you can talk like that for 45 minutes.
You want to bet? Let me try, Father.
No.
Put me in, Coach. All right. So, cool. No. We're back.
On the bench.
On the bench. So, last week...
We are back on the bench.
We are. We do. We live on in an area of Boise known as the bench. It's the best part of Boise. And anybody who's too, who thinks it's like, oh, that's where poor people live.
Well, just... guess what? You can come outside and Sam will fight you for mayor.
Mayor well. I will. I'll beat the crap out of you for the mayordom. Yeah, there's
bare knuckle it.
Yeah, there's not like a lot of guns, but there are some shootings. It happens. It's fine. We're fine. Right? We're fine.
Dude, I'm from California, man.
Yeah, like, he's from California.
This is easy.
But you're from like wine country California.
No, I'm
aren't
not.
You?
No,
okay. I keep trying to conceptualize.
I'm 40 minutes from Stockton. Rated like the worst city to live in all of America.
Oh, no.
Highest in carjackings, I think. Something like that.
That's so rude to the good people of Stockton.
Okay, I'm sorry for those five people. let's continue.
All right. So last week we talked about a box. Do you remember, Jace?
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately,
it was the Dybbuk box. The box full of ghosts and spooks.
I thought it was one ghost.
Maybe could be multiple ghosts. We're gonna talk about that a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit.
I thought it was Ghost in the Shell.
That's a different thing. The reoccurring gift that no one wants. Just regifting. That's the box that smells like cat pee and jasmine. That is what we talked about last week. And guess what? That's what we're going to talk about this week.
The smell?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Primarily. If you didn't listen to last week's episode, that's up to you, honestly. I mean, it was good, I think. It was okay. It was kind of funny. We made some jokes. Apparently, they weren't very good. it was an episode. And you should probably listen to that episode before you listen to this episode. Maybe I should have started with that so you didn't listen to 7 minutes of banter before we got to that disclaimer.
You can fix it in post.
Nah, I'm not gonna.
Okay.
So go back and listen to that, because today we're picking up mid-story. See, last week we ended with Kevin Manis's mother having a stroke and telling him that she hated the birthday present he gave her. And then him putting it all together that this birthday present, this Dybbuk box, was evil and had an evil presence that was causing spiritual projections to invade the dreams of him and his family members. And yeah, and so he decides to sell the Dybbuk box on the Electronic Bay, which was our primary source for last week's episode, was the Electronic Bay listing. However, the story does not end with Kevin Manis. See, a buyer for the box finally came in the form of a college student by the name of Josef Nitzke. It's German, I think. I'd almost put money on it.
Why'd you name... Wait. It has an L.
No, that's an I.
Oh.
Josef Nitzke.
Okay, sure.
Yes.
Right on along here.
He was studying at Truman State University in Missouri when he bought the box for $140. That's a steal for a genuine disembodied soul. However, just 8 months later, the box shows up again on eBay. See, according to Nietzsche, he and his roommate suffered a compendium of paranormal afflictions radiating from the box. Josef claimed that his hair was falling out at unimaginable rates. In the listing, he stated that he had gone so far as to take a blood test to try to pin down what exactly was happening to him, and it had come back from his doctor completely clean. Now, we're not talking about a clump of hair here. As two hair-minded individuals, you and I think we can both accept the terror of this when we say that over the course of 10 days, Josef Nitzke lost half of his hair. It just fell out.
Sounds like some radiation right there.
It does sound like some radiation. But that I would think that would show up on a blood test. I think that was the entire point. And now with Kevin Manis and with the next...
I wonder what half.
What? Oh, ooh.
If you the top down, yeah, are we talking
like quadrants?
Yeah, you know? He looks down, it's checkered.
If it was up to me, honestly, if it was up to me, I would lose the dome piece, the cap.
So you would just look like an old person.
Yeah. But I could also like pass it off as like, oh, I'm a monk. Because monks do that. They used to do
that. Yeah, that's weird, right?
Yeah.
What does that signify?
I think
does it signify anything?
I think it signifies like piety before God and like the same kind of function as a yarmulke.
Yeah.
Except you just do it.
Except
like,
this one has a potential of skin cancer.
Well, true. A very high potential of skin cancer. Well, lower because it's primarily in the Middle Ages and there wasn't a hole in the ozone layer then. Right? Yeah, that's
a there wasn't a hole in the ozone layer. Yeah, but I mean, UV rays
they
still
have
go
those
through.
Hats that are the hoods. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what they have. That's what I would go for if I had to. What half of your hair would you lose?
I would.
I'm so stupid. I could just cut off half of the length of my hair,
and you're
be
done.
Fine.
You're done,
huh?
I would get this a sweet like faux hawk mohawk thing going on.
See, you'd take it in stride.
I would.
Listen to that.
I'd be like, let's
you
rock
wouldn't
and roll,
be like
baby.
Nitsuki, who's like freaking out about it.
Well, I mean, if I lost hair on the very top of my head,
true.
A different story, man.
That'd be spooky. So yes, half
my
of his hair went
would
away.
Would laugh at me so hard.
Now, also mimicking something that had happened when Kevin Manis had the box, the light bulbs in his dorm would often shatter. For absolutely no definable or understandable reason, sometimes ending in injury as pieces of glass flew through the air. And the smell of cat urine reigned supreme. As opposed to jasmine, however, he claimed to smell juniper or juniper bushes, which is a very acrid sort of smell as well. So it could be just the same cat piss smell is basically what I read. I don't know. I've never smelled a juniper. I haven't even drank that much gin. I think I've drank gin once.
Is gin from juniper?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know these
Send
things.
Us gin.
No.
No.
With a D.
No. No. Double no. Now
I have to make that gin. There's got to be something
there's
there.
Gotta there's got to be something there. Somebody's there. Already done this. If not... we're already incorporated as a business.
We'll
just start selling liquor. We also see, however, some really weird, unique effects that didn't occur when Kevin had the box, one of which was referred to simply as a bug infestation. It didn't really say much more than that, other than there were a lot of bugs really, really fast, and then supposedly they left. There was also...
Well, when you leave the pizza out on the table... What do you expect to
happen? It's true. It's true. There was also a burning of the eyes, and every day they'd wake up and their eyes would be bloodshot. They also experienced the same...
Wait, they'd wake up with bloodshot eyes? That doesn't make much sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your eyes have been closed all night. Why are they bloodshot?
Sure.
Okay.
Exactly. That's, I agree.
Okay.
It's almost as if a ghost did it.
What did the ghost do? Just poke you in the eye?
Just rubbed his finger.
Hey, wake up.
Just rubbed his finger on your eye.
Okay.
Cool. Also, they all had the same violent, terrifying nightmare that Kevin had of a friend or a family member walking along and then transforming into an evil old hag and beating the crap out of them. And then they'd wake up with bruises on their bodies. This led to insomnia, which led to further insanity. I'm really surprised that it's like,
and
it sounds like a
scores.
Yeah, seriously. It sounds like a group of young men who are all living together, college-age kids. It's really surprising that none of them ended up dead. I mean, they're just like ramping up with craziness, and then you take away sleep, and then you add the stress of college. Like, yeah, it's not great. Yosef claimed to see big black bars, basically, on either side of his vision, out of the corner of his eyes, just thick black apparitions just trailing him and staying in the relative same position. And there was other weird activity as well. Electronics in the house would stop working randomly. About one thing a day would be found to either not be functioning correctly or not at all. And then the next day it would pretty much just go back to normal, and then it would be something else and just like a cycle. And on top of all of this, there was one time when Yosef's car would not start. when that was the case, he took it to the mechanic, who found a lot of dead mice in the engine.
What time of year is that?
Oh, I don't know. I think he bought it...
I mean, if it's in winter, that makes a little bit more sense.
Sure. Which would be fine. I'm fine with saying it was probably in the winter. I cannot remember. I don't remember or recall. He had it for a few months, though. And so we don't have... And unfortunately, the original... Unlike the original posting with Kevin Manis, where we have a record of his original eBay posts, pretty much all of Nitsky's comes secondhand. You can't really actually find the original anymore. Yeah, so we're probably missing a lot of information here that would be really good. But it remains that about, I think it's about 8 months after he purchased it, he just gave up and he sold it again. And they decided to return to the foul well from whence this Dybbuk box came into their life, the electronic bay. And from whence it came, so too again did it go into the world, perched on the possibility of descending into that dread blackness from which supposedly no physical paranormal evidence may ever return. And yet... it didn't, which is really one of the most interesting things about the box, is that it's still around. These sorts of urban legends, usually they talk about somebody finding something and maybe you have a few pictures here or there or whatever, but then the box gets lost to time and nobody finds it.
Yeah, why hasn't it been burnt yet? Like, just destroy it.
Well, because there's a demon inside it. Nobody can really agree on how to get the demon out in a safe way. It's not a demon, it's a Dybbuk. Dybbuk.
Which is just another type of demon.
Well, it's a human soul. It's a person. The Dybbuk is a person, too. I break for Dybbuk.
Okay. That's great. That's super awesome, buddy.
Thank you.
I would burn it.
I know you would. And you'd probably die.
I would actually
probably be fine.
Probably keep it out of the reach of young children.
Okay.
And keep it in my home.
That sounds
maybe
like
store wine in it.
That's exactly what Havala did.
Exactly.
Except she didn't store wine in it. But no, like it gets purchased, and we know who purchases it. And the guy who purchases it is a man by the name of Jason Haxton. He is the director.
No, Jason, why?
Jason, why? Jason's gotta stick together.
We do, man. We do.
There's not enough of you. You're always put down.
Gotta make the other Jasons proud.
Yeah.
Like all the other Mortys.
Jason Haxton, who is the director of the Museum of Osteopathic Medicine in Kirksville, Missouri, which just goes to show that there's
Ain't
weirdos
that
everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah,
there's just everywhere. There's a weirdo who wants
that's
to buy
a lot
demon possessed.
That's a lot
box.
Of bland, is what that is.
Apparently, Haxton has quite the collection, not only of the Dybbuk box, or had quite the collection, not only of the Dybbuk box, but also he had like ancient Mayan ruins and like Egyptian idols and things like that. All these different cursed items, or culturally like relevant, whatever. I don't know. Haunted old stuff was his collection. And it goes to show, right? Because he bought this box for $280. Now, if you'll remember,
that's twice as much.
That's twice as much, which goes to show you that if you're looking for a safe investment,
it appreciates quite well.
Haunted boxes are the way to go. It's pretty much the only thing that won't depreciate in value these years.
I wonder if size is also like important with that.
Oh, I'm sure.
What about like a haunted casket?
You need to be able to find the exact spooks per square inch. And the higher...
You mean cubic inches.
Oh, sure. The higher SSI squared, the higher price. The Dybbuk box has a spooks per square inch of probably like 7,000. That's a lot.
Square inches. 7,000 square inches.
No. Spooks. 7,000 spooks per square inch.
Okay.
Someone who knows math, I said the dimensions last episode. You can find out how many spooks are in this box.
Okay.
You
done?
I'm good.
You're just making up random
I'm
figures. That's all you're doing.
I'm trying to commit insurance fraud.
Ah.
Nobody heard that. Okay. So Haxton bought the box. And yeah, so over the following years, Haxton, who claims that he bought the box not because he was interested in it being haunted, but simply as a historical curiosity, which I think is just complete bunk. I don't think that there's any possibility that he wasn't like, oh, a haunted box. Even if he didn't believe it, he probably would not have bought it if it wasn't supposedly haunted. But he comes to know of its haunted powers.
Oh, man. What happens to our fellow Jason?
Well, it starts with the cat piss and the jasmine, and because it always does. And it really does seem to have a connection with this idea that evil spirits have weird attachments to smell. However, that's really neither here nor there. But with the advent of Haxton receiving the box, we start our descent into true madness. Because before this, I mean, yeah, we've had some bad gift ideas and some surprisingly nonchalant reactions to your mother having a stroke. But none of it was super crazy. None of it was insane. But with Haxton, he finds some truly problematic and troubling things, as we're going to talk about here shortly. Haxton's his experiences are really very much like Kevin Manis's. I'm not going to go into much detail about them. You have the same sort of, like I said, the smell. You have, again, smoke alarms going off. You have light bulbs shattering. Haxton, however, and he did have the box for longer than anybody else, he had a lot more physical reactions. He claimed that at one point he was covered in welts head to toe. He claimed that he had random boils just spring up. His eyes would go completely agitated red, as if infected by something, which it probably was. It was probably whatever was making the cat piss smell got in his eyes.
Probably.
And had to go to the doctor. Your cat peed in your eyes. That's gonna cause problems, Mr. Haxton. I'd hate to be his doctor. That would be terrible. You're right. That lady's right. Our jokes are bad. Wow. Yeah. He also, though, he reported more serious things as well, though. Things like coughing up blood regularly, and things for which the doctor could not find a cause. And so he determined that the only reason why this would happen is because he has this box. And I would agree with
that. Not any one of the other cursed items that he collects.
No, the Mayan cursed items don't do anything. The Egyptian, nothing at all. It's just this one box. Just goes to show that it's, while they do appreciate nicely in value, it's still a gamble, one way or the other.
Is it really worth it at the end of the day?
I think it is. I really
basically
do.
Basically self-mutilation.
Yeah, that's true. These people are deeply, deeply not well.
Yeah. I guess it's the same kind of idea of going to like a haunted house, though. Or like a haunted maze.
I guess, but...
You know you're kind of in for it, but it's not going to get you?
Well, yeah, but it's not going to get you. Like, you're, like it's a guy. It's like a teenager in a costume.
Right.
It's not like an evil spirit inside of a box that's going to make you cough up blood.
Are we sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
well, fine, I was part of a haunted corn maze once.
Yeah, were you dressed up as yourself?
We did. It was a musical haunted corn maze because I was a theater kid. And so.
Oh, man. I wish I knew that, Sam.
He was the worst. And so.
High school Jason would have made fun of you.
Yeah, probably. And so we, in our section of the corn maze, we reenacted Sweeney Todd. And so there was like, have you ever seen Sweeney
Todd?
Yes. Oh, it's so good. So I was Beetle. I was the little, he's like the judge's henchman. He's played by the same guy who plays Rat Wormtail.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was him. I just went around saying creepy stuff and walking in and out of the corn. It was awesome. But then we had, because we were a theater department, we had like another point where people would walk by and Sweeney would be shaving someone and he'd cut him and we had like fake blood and a pump. And so we pumped fake blood onto people. It was freaking awesome. I completely forgot why we talked about that other than, oh yeah, it's not the same as buying a haunted box. I can guarantee that.
Right. I'm just in it for the scares, bro.
In it for the spooks. So this is what Haxton does. He says, this box is dangerous. So in his own words, he buys a shockproof military-grade container and he buries the box somewhere that no one will ever look.
That a boy. Now, is this all in like still 2001, 2002?
No, this is
or
over.
Has this been years?
This is over. I think Haxton has the box from like 2014 to like 2007 or 2004 to 2017. Like, he has the box.
Man, he tried his hardest.
Yeah, he did. He really held on to it and really did his best. And when he buries the box, that's where we're going to leave it for right now. We're going to come back to it. We're going to see what happens to it after this point in life. But after he's buried it, he decides to do some research. In his own words, the box has always represented to him some sort of a historical puzzle, something that he could understand if he really tried, things like where it came from, why it existed at all, and what it was.
If the effects are trademark, essentially, to certain types of...
Yeah, yeah, even without the haunted aspect of it, though. Mm-hmm. He was really just intrigued by where it came from, because you have the Shema prayer on the back, you have the interesting items, the stone with Shalom written on it, you have the two bound pieces of hair.
Yeah, it does sound like a puzzle, doesn't it?
It does sound a little like a puzzle. And so he really decided that he needed to get to the bottom of this. And so the best way that he could think to do that was to travel from Kirksville, Missouri to Portland, Oregon, where he met up with Kevin Manis, the original, well, not the original, but the second owner of the box, mm-hmm. after Havila. And once he met with Manis there, he was taken on a tour, basically, around town of the different locations where the box had been and told of the different events in detail, more specific detail. And he came away just knowing, in addition with his own experiences, that there was something going on here. And he really, really, really wanted to find out what could be causing this. Why would this be happening? And so Haxton, by way of Manis, gets in touch with like the estate sale company, which got in touch with the family of Havila. And through the family of Havila...
Wow, he really did some digging.
He really did some digging. He wrote a whole book on this, and there's a documentary as well. I didn't read or watch it, but apparently it's fine. I don't know. Okay. There's a lot of information there, though.
You should let me know. I would watch the documentary.
That's fair. That's fair. As he meets with Havila's granddaughter, she is then able to put him in touch with someone that Kevin Manis didn't even know existed, and that is Havila's cousin, Sophie. Very much younger cousin, if you'll remember. Havila lived to be 103 years old. Sophie was nowhere near that age, but she was still pretty darn old at that time. Now, all of Havila's immediate family was killed during the Holocaust, but members of her family, extended members, like Sophie, cousins, other aunts and uncles, that sort of thing, they did end up surviving. And when Haxton spoke with Sophie, he got closer to the origin of the box. It is still completely unknown how exactly this box came about. All that was known is that she did not have it before World War II, and then when she left Spain for America, I think in the 40s or 50s, she did have it. And so she picked it up somewhere along the way, most likely in Spain. But what we do learn from Sophie is that Havila and her had started in the 1930s dabbling around in the dark arts. And this was something that was not necessarily uncommon.
No, especially. I touched before on seances and that kind of stuff in the Victorian era.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of stuff still occurred. There's still that same interest in the early 30s.
Yeah. Yeah. It was even, Sophie even said that between the two world wars, it was at an all time high, and especially tragically.
It makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you do have so much loss of life.
Yeah. You're trying to get in touch with those poor dead relatives, even if just for a second, beyond the veil. But Sophie and Havila, they got in touch with something else, and it didn't seem to be a person, or at least a freshly dead person. It was some sort of an entity, some sort of a spirit. And unfortunately, Sophie, well, you know, I'm not going to say unfortunately, because if it's true, I'm sure it was very traumatic. She simply didn't want to talk about that in detail. She mentioned what happened and talked about the events, but she didn't say anything about what the spirit supposedly was called, didn't give us any clues as to what it may actually be, or if it has any other tie-in with the supernatural or paranormal at all. They started by using a spirit board, and they had regular seances with, it was a whole group of them, and they had fun at first until this entity shows up. And over the course of months, if not years, the entity continues to kind of harass them. So for instance, if they would do their seances the same time every week, Thursday at 7, that sort of a thing. Now, if the seance started any later than that, individuals within the group would feel accosted. They would have either physical pain or psychological negative effects. Again, she didn't explain exactly what happened. Even if they did do the seance on time, the being would still, during the course of the session, would belittle them, would abuse them verbally and psychologically, and really instill fear into them, until the point, as it grew and grew and grew and got more of a sway over them, until about 1938. And in 1938, suddenly the spirit was no longer happy simply being brought up every now and then. It told them that it wanted to pass through. It wanted to come over from wherever it was to wherever they were.
Sounds like a demon.
Yeah, it does sound like a demon. And that's the thing, is that we say that this thing is the Dybbuk box, and it is the Dybbuk box, whether we like it or not. But this story here, as well as a lot of the other information that we have about the box, does not sound like a true Jewish Dybbuk. A lot of people, Jewish folkloric scholars who have talked about this, rabbis and the like, do not say it is a Dybbuk, because the Dybbuk, again, is something that it's a human person that possesses another person, and it's an intelligence that co-owns that body for a period of time. While you have the stories
gosh, it's a symbiote.
Pretty much. It's Venom.
It's Venom.
It's, was that movie good? Did you watch it?
I haven't seen it yet. Okay. I thought about going to it after this, but I probably will just save my $5.
I heard it was not very good.
My brother... Okay, so both my brother and Adam said it was better than what they expected. Huh. Both my brother and Adam also said they were not expecting much.
Hmm.
So... I love Tom Hardy.
But I think I know a few people who actually really enjoyed it as well. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
it's a thing. It's a movie. And you're not going to know until you go see it yourself how you feel about it. So
you're right.
But that doesn't mean you can't just wait for it to hit Redbox and pay a dollar.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's a symbiote. It's symbiote. Wow.
Symbiote. Symbiote?
Symbiote, I think is the
word.
Yeah,
that makes more sense. Thank you. Sounds right.
And while you do have stories of the exorcism of Dybbuks being used, or using white candles and crystal flasks and this and that and the other, they're not supposed to stay in the flask. They go in there and then they go away pretty quick. They're condemned, they're absolved. The thought of it staying in this vessel, while it's possible, is not very well known and is not very common, even within the Dybbuk literature of the 17th and 16th century Poland and the area, and Eastern Europe in general.
Hold on. So you cap it.
Yes, Jason has a bottle of cold brew that he's using for an illustration.
Eventually it just dissolves into nothingness inside the glass, or?
Putting it in the glass.
Do you do another ritual in order to?
Another step, yeah.
Okay, so if you know where it's at, you can get rid of it some other way.
Pretty much.
Okay.
It would be irresponsible to keep it bound, and the crystal flask and any other container is simply one way of doing it. Many other reports are straight from the body to the nether realm, whatever it is. You don't have this intermediary thing in it as well.
Okay.
So you're right when you say it sounds more like a traditional demon than anything else. And I'm inclined to agree with you. I think that this is something that, due to the grandmother calling it a Dybbuk, that's probably why we think of this as a Dybbuk. But we don't actually know if it is or isn't. And of course, if you don't believe in any of this at all, it's neither, and that's totally fine.
In Jewish culture, though, a Dybbuk is the closest thing that they have to a demon, right?
Well, a Dybbuk is expressly different from a demon, wherein a demon is, again, a fallen angel or a non-human entity,
mm-hmm.
non-human spiritual entity, whereas a Dybbuk is a extremely human spiritual entity.
Okay.
It is human. It's just not in a body at that time.
and very upset, at least on this one.
Very upset.
Are they normally upset?
Well, yes. They're usually not having a great time because they are either on their way to eternal punishment and they decide to hide for a while.
Right.
Or else they have been barred from another chance at life and another chance at progression.
See, I'd be like, yeah, my knees don't pop anymore.
Yeah.
I don't have any.
I'm a spirit forever. Let's do it.
Who needs doors?
You can't stop me. It's funny that you mentioned doors. We'll get there.
Perfect.
Anyway, so yeah, but you do. You have these girls and other people in the seance group. We don't know how many people were a part of it and the ages and all of that. We just know there were multiple people there, aside from Sophie and Havilah. And they're being threatened and they're being coerced to try to bring this thing over from the nether realm, the spooky place. And finally, the group decides that they're going to do it. They're going to bring it over, but they're only going to do it so that they can cap it, they can contain it, and then they can deal with it. And they're going to try to involve people of higher spiritual nature and religious people and this and that and the other, and they're going to try to make this happen. And so they decide to take this step on the night of November 10th, 1938. Now, as far as we know, the Dybbuk box is not around at this time. Sophie doesn't state exactly what they were planning on to put it in, but they were planning to put it in something. And we do know as well that they failed. They did end up summoning the being, whatever it was, and whatever they did. Something else ended up occurring the same night as that ritual, and it's this thing that occurs that is the reason that Sophie can trace it back to that exact night of November 10th, 1938.
Is this where the locks of hair come in?
Well, the locks of hair are kind of, it's thought that they are, some of it is Havilah's hair and some of it is Sophie's hair.
That's my assumption.
And it's used for binding.
Is that in the story? Okay.
No, because when she gets to America, it's just got the stuff in it.
Right, same thing with the box itself. I knew that, but I wasn't sure if Sophie would.
It could be.
Would, yeah, explain that at all.
She doesn't. No. Oh, perfect. At least not as far as I know. Again, she may in the book.
To interpretation.
If you buy the book, you may find more answers. No, she doesn't mention. Again, she's traumatized by this still. 50, 60 years later, she doesn't explain exactly what they did or how. But this other thing that occurs on November 10th, 1938, is an event known as Kristallnacht, which translates directly to Crystal Night. Now, this was the first major act of violence against the Jewish people in conjunction with the Nazis' rise to power. It's viewed by many historians as the beginning of the Holocaust, and over 250 synagogues were attacked with sledgehammers and fire. Over 7,000 Jewish businesses were damaged, at least 91 people lost their lives, and an additional 30,000 Jewish individuals were rounded up, arrested, and sent to camps. It's called Kristallnacht due to the shards of glass that littered the streets after the windows were destroyed. And I really don't want to make light of this. We've made a lot of jokes throughout this entire series because a lot of this has been kind of dumb. It's been good, but like, kind of dumb. This is something that is just horrific, and it's the beginning of the most horrific event in modern history. And as happens sometimes on this show, we find ourselves bumped right up against things that are so beyond our depth and comprehension, things that we can't even conceptualize, that I really don't have much more to say about Kristallnacht and this whole ritual. Other than to say that if it's not true, and if Haxton just made this up to embellish and sell his book, then he's screwed, like, in the eternal sense. God have mercy on his soul. But I do believe that this specific incident does have significance to the story. Haxton's not Jewish. He continually, throughout all of his different writings and posts and blog posts and this and that, just references the fact that he has no idea about any of that culture. It's not something that he's well acquainted with. And so I don't see him making up this detail as well, because he has also seemed to be very respectful in contacting rabbis, contacting experts in Jewish folklore and different fields to get a well-rounded opinion on this. And we're going to talk about the potential monetary motivations for this all in a minute. Like I said, he wrote a book about it. He made a documentary. A movie has been made about this. I don't know if he profited from that exactly. And then he did end up selling the box, as we'll talk about. But I have to believe that this is at least in some way true. It may have happened around that time. Sophie may have misremembered and conflated the two. But I really do think that this scared young person did something that they weren't supposed to do. And then whether it was minutes, hours, days, weeks, or even months later, this terrible thing happened and she conflated the two in her mind. So that's my take on it. I don't know. I always feel really weird when we hit actual like terrible things in our show.
Right.
It's weird. But what really convinces me of that is, again, one more detail that, again, I don't have a phone call recorded or a video recording of this to prove it. But according to Haxton, after Sophie mentioned this and mentioned the ritual and the date that it took place on, she was visibly upset, and she started crying and apologizing. And Haxton says, I don't, like, what? Like, no, it's fine. What? You don't need to apologize. It's okay. And Sophie basically lets it out that she believes that in some way or another, probably in a big way, that she, Havilah, and their entire little spiritualist group were responsible for World War II because of this evil spirit that they brought through. She assumes that that is what caused the evil of that time to rise in a way that it hasn't in modern history very much. And it is. It's something that's just, I mean, it just, that kind of stuff messes with you. It's like, even if you don't believe in Ouija boards, even if you don't believe in spiritualism or anything like that, I still don't advocate using them because it can mess with you psychologically. Even if you don't believe it has any power, it can still mess you up. Like I truly believe it did for these girls. I don't know if they brought something over. I don't know if they summoned some evil spirit, but I know that she really believes she did. And Havilah most likely did as well. And that's the idea, is that after the war, Havilah, and this would be a great book to write or a movie to watch, Havilah goes demon hunting. And she ends up capturing this being and putting it in the box and keeping the box sealed from there for forever. And you do, within the box, you have a wine cup that has been identified as potentially having use in Jewish ceremony. You have the two bound pieces of hair that have, again, supposedly significance in binding evil spirits. Different paranormal, quote unquote, paranormal investigators and experts have looked at this box and its contents over the last 18 years. And they've all come up with like, well, if you look at this and this, it all makes sense. And none of it makes sense. And none of it's like, we can't actually tell what anything is here.
Yeah, it only makes sense if you look through it in a very particular filter.
Exactly. And everyone's going to have a different one.
It makes sense that there are so many of these weird, like oddball objects in there. If you are demon hunting or monster hunting in any sense of the word, if you're not sure what's going to do the trick, just bring it all.
Yeah, that's true.
just bring everything.
You want to be prepared. But then on the other side of it, it's also completely possible that the objects mean nothing at all.
Yeah.
And that, you know, these are the hairs of her as a child or her friend or her daughter or this or that or the other thing.
That's really creepy. Is that not creepy?
People save their kids' hair. My mom,
that's creepy.
When I was a young child, I had long curly hair. It was curlier than this. This
is your hair is curly. Not curly,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, okay. So it was curly.
Okay.
Which it is not now. And she ended up cutting my curls off and was so sad about it that she kept them, and she still has them somewhere. And they don't have like a big significant part of her life. They're just in like literally a scrapbook somewhere. But people did this. And like you would hear about, you know, you hear about all the time, like, oh, Jimmy's going to war. I'm going to give him a lock of my hair. And this, that, and the other thing.
It's also, I think, really creepy.
It is quite unsettling, I'll be honest.
Like, if I was going to war, I don't want to be sniffing someone's hair, being like, yeah, Jenny.
Rachel.
Yeah, that's really weird.
That was my Batman impression.
That was okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good, I thought. Yeah, it could just be random crap, honestly. But
yeah, it could just be weird stuff. It's a junk drawer in a box.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
could be.
Interestingly enough,
cup has a hole in it. I don't.
Again, a lot of people do say that it has spiritual significance. I'm not going to say that they're wrong. I do think that there might be something to this box. I think it might be haunted. It could also be nothing. Not Alone is sponsored by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. Now, Robinhood has a commitment to making financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy, and that's why when you're using their application, you're going to find a simple and intuitive, clear design. With data that is presented in an easy-to-digest way, the end result is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. And while other brokerages may charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood does not charge commission fees. You can trade your stocks and keep all of your profits. And like I said, it's easy to understand. There are charts, there's market data, and the app is so simplified that you can place a trade in just 4 taps of your smartphone. And if you're not sure what you'd like to invest in, the Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections, things like the 100 most popular stocks, or break it down by sectors, things like entertainment and social media, and even curated categories like female CEOs. And in addition to that, they provide analyst ratings of whether to buy, hold, or sell for every stock. You can learn by doing. You can learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You can discover new stocks and track your favorite companies with personalized news feeds. And you can receive custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Now, Robinhood is giving all of our listeners a free stock. Now, these aren't some 2-bit penny stocks. This is stuff like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to either help start your portfolio or to continue to build it. Now, you can sign up at alone.robinhood.com. That's alone, A-L-O-N-E, .robinhood.com. Head on over, get your free stock, and start making your money work for you today. Paxton also found another link, however, to Hitler in his research of the box. Now, Truman State University, the college that was attended by Yusuf Nitsky,
right,
which is located in Kirksville, Missouri, which is Haxton's hometown, went by another name. And actually,
that's really weird.
It is very strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because supposedly he bought this over eBay. I've thought about that.
Yeah.
Supposedly he buys it over eBay.
Mm-hmm.
But did he? Maybe he was Yusuf Nitsky all along, or maybe he like knew Yusuf Nitsky and bought him from that way or something. I don't know. But according to him, there he was involved in a very serious bidding war, and like only won at the very last second by $6.
That's how you do it.
That's how you get. You gotta snipe it.
Real clutch.
Like that Weird Al song.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Let's continue.
So.
We're derailed again.
Nah. So Kirksville, Missouri, home of Truman State University. And Truman State University, before it was that, was Northeast Missouri State University. And it holds many notable people as alumni, but in the confines of our story, the most notable of them would be Harry H. Laughlin. Now, Laughlin was a eugenicist. He held the office.
Oh, perfect.
Yep. Of Superintendent of Eugenics Record. Or he held the position of the superintendent of the eugenics records offices from its opening in 1910 until its closing in 1939. Eugenics is a really messed up
way
of thinking.
It's a
extremely racist, extremely terrible all around.
It gives like real genetic science. I feel like a bad name.
A bad name,
it's
for
like
sure.
It's like the pseudoscience version of it to explain being an a-hole to other people.
It's quite exactly what it is. Yeah, and it's this idea of trying to create good genetic stock in our society, good genetic breeding stock, because that's how people like to be referred to. And often it was through the process of the sterilization of unfit members of the population, people like the mentally ill, criminals, alcoholics, blind, deaf, and other quote, defective persons. He was a monster, of course, and he was described as...
He's basically a Spartan.
He's basically a Nazi.
Yeah.
Spartans? Yeah. Are they Nazis? No.
No. They just, like, you know, murdered their children if they are deformed at whatsoever or undersized. Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah, they were messed up. They're all messed up people. Cultural relativism.
Warrior culture.
Yeah. Be darned. Laughlin was a monster. He was described as the most racist and anti-Semitic of the early 20th century eugenicist, which I would say...
That's really impressive.
It's probably...
That's real impressive.
It's probably in pretty hot contention for that
title. I wonder how he won that yearbook.
Most likely to be awful, Laughlin. And his work, and especially his policies that he got passed as into law for a short time, or... Well, not short enough of a time, directly influenced Adolf Hitler and reassured Hitler of the inferiority of the Jewish people, as well as made policy that ended up with over 350,000 individuals being sterilized as part of the Nazi regime. And in addition to that previous list of defects was also added simply the quality of being Jewish was enough to get you sterilized.
What train of thought gets an individual to think of others in this manner?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
How do you not like stop? I mean, we talk about people going down these kinds of paths before, but seriously though, how do you not like
nobody?
Hold up, wait a second. Yeah. Should I be thinking about this for others? Like, how do you?
You just
I don't know, man.
You have to assume that nobody.
It.
Stop them young enough. Like, nobody, when they were growing up, they had some really harmful, toxic ideas, as all of us do, and nobody corrected them, and nobody, like, set them on the right path. And then those base seeds of terrible ideas, instead of being stomped out or pruned or fixed, as it is in the majority of people, or the majority, hopefully...
They got reinforced somehow.
They got reinforced somehow, or simply ignored and allowed to grow and grow and grow. And if you think you're right about one thing, you'll think you're right about the other thing, and that'll end to you destroying your fellow human beings.
Well, as a kid, like, school group projects always made me think, man, this would be so much better if everyone was just like me. I'm not a racist, though, so
no.
Clearly
right.
Things have changed quite a bit since my childhood understanding of if everyone had just done their homework
life
would be easier.
That's what I'm saying is that like, everybody has, at a point in their life or another, everybody has a fear of the people and the things that they perceive as different than themselves. And there are two ways to deal with that, and the first one is to destroy it and to show people are frickin' people, and every human being has dignity, or you reinforce it, and it grows and grows, and you're terrible parents, and they're terrible parents, and you're terrible friends, and suddenly you're a terrible person reinforcing your terrible child's terrible ideas.
You know, I think there's very few things that you just cannot settle over a plate of good food.
That's true.
Like,
wisdom.
If you're afraid of culture... Just go eat with them.
Yeah.
Try it.
Yeah.
Have a conversation.
I agree. Don't be a freaking racist.
Yeah,
Halloween.
Do
this.
That's the big one.
Especially with Halloween coming up.
Yeah.
Don't be racist.
Don't do that.
Don't do it.
Don't.
Anyway, thanks for taking the charge on the moral soapbox that time. I like that.
You got it.
Thankfully, Laughlin died.
Really, he wasn't like cryo frozen.
He wasn't
immortal. Later.
Yeah, when all the bad ones are gone. He died in Kirksville, where the box would then later spend the majority of its time outside of its time with Havilah. And this to Haxton pretty well solved it. And after many years of living in terror of the box, he decided that he had all the information he needed. The box, he felt like, was conscious enough in some way to try to make its way to the person that caused the suffering. That was kind of his idea, is that it had to end up in Kirksville. And that's why Yusuf Nitsky got it. And then when Nitsky tried to sell it, he then got it. However, Haxton decided there was no place in his hometown for this box, and he decided to get rid of it, to sell it, and to get it out of there.
Well, wouldn't a local just buy it? Like, if the box really is sentient enough to dictate its own future?
To dictate its fate. Maybe. And maybe it'll end up back there. But it's not there now.
Oh.
And the reason it's not there now is because it was sold. Now, before he sold it, he did a little research into finding out, like we said, exactly not only where it came from and why it's so evil and weird, but also what it is. And a few different experts in Jewish antiquities and just Jewish objects in general came to the conclusion that the box is not a wine cabinet as much as it is what is known as Aron HaKodesh, which means Torah Ark. And basically, it's a small box cabinet. It's also known as like the scroll cabinet, I think.
Okay.
And you put your Torah scroll in it.
Which makes sense for having the prayer inscribed on the back.
Exactly. You put your Torah scroll in it, and then you open it up, and then you move the scroll along to read the Torah. And it kind of, I don't know what
interesting.
I'm trying to say. Yeah, it is interesting. I don't know how it would work exactly. But that's supposedly what it is.
So what's the bottom drawer for?
Paraphernalia. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
A Torah ark is usually the centerpiece of a synagogue. They're large. They're grand. This one was just a little personal.
Like a home one,
Home use, yeah. It's also technically the proper name of the Ark of the Covenant is the Aron HaKodesh. And so to mimic this, or not to mimic this, but to draw upon this, Haxton constructed something that he thought would keep the evil energies of the box in check, and it was fashioned after the Ark of the Covenant itself. It was a screen of acacia wood, the interior of which was covered with gold, and fitted around the exterior of the box. This is the construction of the Ark of the Covenant. It's made of acacia wood, its insides are lined with gold, and its outsides are lined with gold. It's just a gold box.
You know it.
You know it. Indiana Jones knows it, and you know it too. And it went to auction for one last time. Now, I say it went to auction. I don't know that it did go to an open auction, or if instead the person who ended up buying it decided to offer him a lot of money to buy it. And now I'm here for the benefit of the doubt, as you all know. I mean, that's kind of why I am here, is to keep Jason's science and skepticism in check. But even this does stretch my credibility a little bit, because in addition to the movie, which he may or may not have made money on, in addition to the documentary and in addition to the book, both of which he did make at least some money on, Haxton reportedly sold the Dybbuk box for tens of thousands of dollars. But who would buy such a thing?
No, hold on.
Okay, all right.
So, Sam, if I'm following this correctly, if I want to invest,
yeah,
I should be investing in quote-unquote haunted objects.
Haunted boxes, to be specific.
Hmm. Interesting.
Because. I don't know if Manus ever
tells
us.
What happens if it falls over and a cat goes in the box? Because cats like boxes. What will happen?
It'll probably just add value, because then you'll have a cat soul trapped in the box as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
Nine
lives, just...
We don't know. I don't think we know how much Manus paid for it. We don't know that he sold it for 140 to Niski, who sold it for 280. It doubled in 8 months.
That's pretty good.
And then you give it like 15 years and you're able to sell it for a few grand. Tens of thousands of dollars is what was told. We don't know the exact number. But who bought it? Who has that much money other than Bob Bigelow of Bigelow Aerospace?
This doesn't fill up his alley.
No, it doesn't. He's not a ghost guy, I don't think.
Yeah, nah.
I'll tell you who. His name is a guy who not everybody, but a lot of people who listen to our show are well aware of and really like, I think. His name is Zach Bagans. Do you know who this person is? Okay. I didn't really either. I had a peripheral knowledge of him, but he's a paranormal investigator who's best known for hosting the Travel Channel series Ghost Adventures.
Oh, one of these guys.
One of those guys.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot that could be said about this. I don't know enough about him or his show or his endeavors to make a judgment call on him. I've seen Ghost Adventures a few times. It's not as good as Most Haunted, and I'll fight you about that. That was like the best Discovery Travel Channel ghost show of all time. I don't know why they stopped making it, but it seems like a fine show. I mean, it's pretty good. And people really do like this guy and his crew and the show. It's a big show. And using the money from Most Haunted, he ended up opening a haunted, Ghost Adventures. He ended up opening a haunted museum in Las Vegas. There are.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool.
I would totally go.
I might
to
have
this.
To do that.
I would totally go to this. You have to be over 16 to go into it. You have to sign a waiver at certain parts. Like it seems like a good afternoon, if nothing else. It's more than 30 rooms that are jam-packed of haunted or otherwise unsettling objects. Things like the chair that Michael Jackson's doctor sat in as MJ died. A staircase from
That's less not nearly that unsettling. I mean, his doctor sat on it, not him.
No, sure, but he like watched him die. This chair saw Michael Jackson die. That's enough.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. Enough. Yeah.
He has an entire staircase that comes from the Gary, Indiana Demon House, which is supposedly was one of the most haunted
places.
How
do you move a staircase?
Well, so it was being demolished anyway, the house was. Okay. And so he just like said, give me that staircase. And then he also got...
What happened on the staircase? Was there something like very particular?
I don't know a lot about the Demon House.
Haunted staircase. Got it.
I know for a fact that our good friends over at Hillbilly Horror Stories... They have done at least one episode on the Gary, Indiana Demon House. So go check that out. And I'm sure some of our other Dark Myths friends have as well. That's just the one that I know. And he got like the dirt from the house that the house was built on. And he like took a truckload of that and put it down and then put the staircase on top of it. Ooh. So if there's going to be a haunting, like he's doing his best to make it happen. Yeah. He also has a cauldron that was used by Ed Gein. Ed Gein, of course, was a serial killer who like made things out of his victims. So yes, there's that. You can listen to Last Podcast on the Left. They have a series on Gein. And of course, in one room, all by itself, now resides the Dybbuk box, which, as I mentioned, this is one thing where you can go into the museum if you're 16. To go in the room with the box, you have to be 18 years old and you have to sign a legal waiver that I want to sign just because I'm pretty sure it says, if I get haunted, I will not sue Zach Bagans.
I really hope there's not a door to that room.
There is a door to that room. And the reason why I mentioned that you mentioned doors earlier is because since the box found its way there... People who have been going through the museum, which if you're going to use like that argument of like, well, you're in a weird place and your brain's going to do weird things. Like this is the most appropriate time to use that argument. But people have.
You're already like ready to go for scaries.
Yeah. People have spooks. Come in the room, closed the door. And
you're
then,
asking for it. Maybe.
Yeah, pretty much. And then seen a black figure walk out of the door, walk through the door, just like you were implying you would do if you were a Dybbuk.
Yeah.
It just walks through the door.
I don't care about doors.
Nah, doors ain't got nothing on me. and you also have like reports of cold spots. That was like the Mr. Ed theme song.
It's all about them cold spots, man.
A horse is a horse. Of course, the spot is cold. Of course. So it's spooky. It's haunted. And Bagans, by his own admission, is too scared to open the box. He keeps it closed, and he keeps that screen of acacia wood and gold around it at all times. But now that we've been talking about the Dybbuk box for like 2.5 hours total, I want to get to the main reason that we're talking about the Dybbuk box. Because...
Oh, finally. I thought we were just talking about it because it's haunted.
No. In our UFO book club's chat that Jason is a part of, but does not ever check or participate in, either...
Well, it's so far along now that it's...
You can jump in at any time. It's not a linear thing.
Ah, okay.
Either one of the other participants, who is either Rob Christofferson, our good friend, Brian Hasty, our good friend, or Angelo Fiorentino, I think is how you say his last name, our good friend. Hi, Angelo. Both of Brian and Angelo from the Double Density podcast. one of them shared a link about our good friend, not our good friend, maybe after this podcast, maybe probably one day. Not. One of our, me and Jason's favorite people in the world, Post Malone. Now, Post Malone.
What does he have to do with this?
He has things to do with it. And that is the reason why we're doing this, is because of Post Malone. I thought this would be like a 45-minute episode that I was just going to do so I could talk about Post Malone on the podcast. But it didn't work out that way. However, before we get into what Post Malone has to do with all of this, Jason, tell me about Post Malone.
All right, Sam. Well, I mean, what do you want to know?
Well,
I did a little bit of homework.
Some
for
of our
you.
Listeners probably don't know anything about Post Malone.
That's crazy talk.
It is crazy talk because he is a superstar.
Both of his records have gone multi-platinum.
He broke like the Spotify streaming record in like a minute.
Yep.
That's not true, but because it's like over the course of a week.
He broke a couple streaming records with his albums. He was born in Syracuse, New York. He grew up in Grapevine, Texas. He was voted most likely to be famous in his senior yearbook.
Nice.
Because he also dropped he made a song on a mixtape and like spread it around high school at like the age of 16.
Nice.
And then after high school, he moved to L.A. with one of his friends, which this is how you know he's our age, because his friend that moved to L.A. with him was a video game streamer.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And he is. He's 23 years old at the time of recording, so he's actually 2 years younger than us.
Yeah, but like
which
same.
Which makes me feel bad.
Right?
About myself.
23, what did I do 2 years ago? Nothing. Nothing. Oh, wait, we started this.
Still nothing.
Anyway, so his music has been, I mean, criticized and popularized for all the things that it is. I mean, he kind of blends together both soft rock, rap, and country music all into one really good flow, in my opinion. I'm impressed by him, but every time I see him, I see more tattoos, which is...
He does have a lot of face tattoos and everything else.
He's getting a few.
He looks interesting.
He does. He's not... When you hear his voice and hear his songs and then see a picture of him, you're like, that's
the guy.
There's
a disconnect there.
Okay.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
If you say so. If you haven't seen any interviews about Post Malone, I recommend the Hot Ones interview. Pretty good. He just sits down and eats a lot of hot wings. It's great.
This is journalism in 2018.
And he went to Olive Garden with Jimmy Fallon. Also quite wonderful.
All right.
Quite wonderful. Right. So what do you want to know? As far as conspiracies go, which I'm assuming that's why we're talking about him. He is a big fan of thinking that all of the government is just essentially a reality TV show.
That's fair.
One tattoo he has is of JFK because JFK outwardly spoke about government corruption.
Nice.
So he digs JFK, and apparently he has a lot of guns too, which I mean,
so
you're, yeah.
Yeah. Post Malone.
Mm-hmm.
Is he a
Austin
part of
Post.
The Illuminati or is he fighting against the
Illuminati?
Illuminati
isn't a thing anymore, Sam.
What?
That died out in the '30s.
You're thinking of the Bavarian Illuminati.
No.
I'm talking about the real Illuminati. he totally Illuminati all the way.
He is or is
no,
not?
No, I think he's fighting
like
the Illuminati.
Against, yeah,
he is.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about Austin Post is that right before he became a millionaire, he was making chicken at like a Bixby's, I think is what it's called. And he was working really hard.
He talks about that in his Hot Ones interview.
Does he? Yeah. He was working really, really hard to make a lot of chicken and sell it so that he could buy really nice shoes. That was what he was like
That's
all about.
Up. That's what's up.
And then when he was 18 years old, I did the math. I think he was 18 years old. No, maybe it was when he was like 20. He collaborated with Kanye West, which would have just been an insane thing to happen to you if you were 20 years old.
He was invited to Kylie Jenner's 18th birthday to perform. And then that's how he got in contact with Kanye. So that makes 20 sounds about right, I guess.
Because he was on The Life of Pablo, which came out, I think,
That was a couple years ago.
Maybe 3 years ago now. That was a crazy album.
Yeah, he was on Faded. So I was
like, that's crazy.
Fade.
Yeah.
Fade. My bad. Other than that, I mean, like,
give
he played
us a
Guitar
song,
Hero.
Rick. Give a, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he played Guitar Hero, and that's why he started picking up music, because he wanted to play guitar.
Yeah. That Guitar Hero was good for a lot of us.
Guitar Hero was a lot of fun. It introduced me to classic rock,
yeah,
which is what matters.
Whoa. Give us, Jason, give us your favorite songs. Give us some song recs for anyone who hasn't listened to Post Malone.
Oh, everyone's. If you have listened to any kind of, like, pop radio, you've heard Post Malone.
Right. What's your favorite Post Malone song? That's what I'm trying to tell.
What's
to
my
ask
favorite?
You.
Man, I actually really like White Iverson. Yeah.
Also, shouts out to, we had one eagle-eyed listener who 2 weeks ago I tweeted that a hint for this week's episode, which was last week's episode, was, and then I spelled out White Iverson, but without the vowels. So it's like WHTVRSN. And this person, I can't remember the name. I could look it up. Perfect. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
They know who they are. They responded like, please tell me you're talking about Post Malone. And I was so happy that they knew what we were doing. So White Iverson, that was like,
yeah,
his
that
first
was, that was like one of his first. Hit. Yeah, that was his first big hit. He likes basketball a lot too, apparently. I don't know. Anyway, useless information.
My
I know about
favorite
Post Malone,
Post Malone song is Better Now.
Everyone's favorite
it's
is
so
Better Now.
Good.
It's so good. It's good. I think it's overrated.
We're a music podcast now.
You're welcome, everyone.
Better Now is so good. I also like Rich and Sad, because that's just his entire persona is Rich and Sad.
So, I would have said like Rich and Tired.
Rich?
He looks really tired.
I'm pretty
all
sure
the time.
The two tattoos under his eyes say always tired.
Oh, I haven't yeah. seen those yet.
Yeah, good yeah, they're there. One time I watched him do a beer bong in like half a second. It was crazy.
Well, I mean, probably why his second album was Beer Bongs and Bentleys.
That's true. We love you, Post Malone. If you ever want to come on the podcast, let us know.
Let's talk conspiracies down.
And I know that a lot of you probably just tuned out for 15 minutes as we talked about Post Malone. I'm not going to apologize. Now, why are we talking about Austin Post? Why?
Why, Sam?
What could he possibly have to do with this cursed box? I'm glad you asked.
Did you forget for a second?
No,
okay.
No, I was waiting.
Was for drama. Okay.
I thought you were going to be like, tell me. And then I was going to say, I'm glad you asked. And then you didn't. And then I waited another second.
This is better. Anyway.
And then you didn't. So anyway.
Let's keep going.
So for over the last year, really actually just the last 2 or 3 months, our good friend, Post Malone, has had an unnatural amount of bad luck. In August of this year, Post and his people were on his private plane on the way to London when suddenly the tires blew off after takeoff. Not blew up, not blew out, blew off. He just lost the wheels of the plane. That's terrifying. I've never heard of that happening before, but nobody really seemed too phased. Like, they were phased by it because they had to make an emergency landing and like, people could have gotten hurt. But nobody treated that as though it was particularly odd. So maybe I just don't know anything about planes and how they crash. Just a few days later, Post was involved in a car crash in West Hollywood, which prompted him to tweet that God must hate me, LOL. I would disagree. If I had 1/25th of the life that Post Malone has and the money that Post Malone has, I would not think that. And in fact, when you survive a car wreck, I would think that that proves that God doesn't hate you, right? Maybe if you died. Now, it is worth noting, though, that his car, which was a white Rolls-Royce Wraith, which is the spookiest car, because
they have a Phantom.
Sure. Wraith is scarier than
I think
Phantom.
Wraith is the bigger one. I want to say the Phantom is the smaller one.
Anyway, it's a Rolls. And apparently this accident was so bad that the car was totaled and just had to be written off as a lost, which is sad. It costs more than everything I've made in my entire life put together. Like, everything I've ever made in my life.
Yeah, Rolls-Royce are pretty expensive.
Yep. And to be fair, the crash did take place around 2 a.m., which, as we know, is the witching hour.
It was like 3:30 a.m.
No, it was 2:40 a.m. I just checked it.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's not what Wikipedia told me.
Wikipedia was wrong.
How dare you, Wikipedia?
And even then, 3:30 a.m., also the witching hour. Still, no matter what.
It's always the witching hour.
You should not be driving during the witching hour. And literally just days after this, the story broke that armed robbers had targeted a home that Postie, which is what his fans call him, Postie and his friends, that's me, Postie had been living in up until recently. These armed robbers had targeted his old house. These three men burst into the home, weapons drawn, and demanded to know where Post Malone was. The occupants told them that they no longer lived there, and they took $20,000 worth of stuff and ran away. So, not a complete loss on that one. If you're living in a house...
Why would you expect Post Malone to still live in the same house he lived in before he got famous?
No, I don't think it was before he got famous. I think that he bought a house, lived in it for a minute, and then bought another house. And then probably two or three more houses. Because he's got millions of dollars.
No, he lived there in the San Fernando Valley. Like, that's where he moved to with his buddy.
Then how did they have $20,000 worth of stuff in that house? I don't have $20,000 worth of stuff in this house.
No. But, I mean, it's been also, like, a decade. No, I'm not. I'm sorry. Like, 5 years since.
Since what?
Since he moved there.
Oh, that's true. Maybe rich people live there now.
You never know.
Gentrification and all of that.
Anyway.
Now, as far as I'm aware.
Why are we talking about Post Malone when we're talking about a Dybbuk box?
As far as I'm aware.
What is going on here?
Post Malone hasn't had any other near misses with disaster in the last month and a half. In fact, he just announced a new tour to Australia. So we have a lot of Australian fans, so go see Postie for us. And he just dropped a song to be featured in the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse animated film.
Sunflower, not bad.
So I haven't heard it yet. He seems to be doing all right. But why?
Why
did this happen in the first place?
Did he buy the box? Did he go see the box?
I'm sure you've already
Please
guessed.
Tell me he went to go see the box.
Video has recently surfaced, which shows Postie, as his friends, family,
and
loved ones, myself, call him, shows Postie wandering around Baggins' haunted museum after closing. I like to imagine that he was alone. He was not, but I just like the idea of him showing up and being like, I'm
Post
Malone.
I feel like he's
alone.
In a bathrobe.
Yeah, probably.
And hi.
And he's just sipping on some beer, walking around, and boom, there we have Zach Baggins. He's walking around with him. And they're having a great time until they get to the Dybbuk box room. And you can see Post is upset. And he just seems like, I don't know about this. And Baggins is standing there with his hand on the box, and he's telling him all about it. And Post keeps making motions like, come on, let's go, let's leave. Finally, Post Malone grabs Zach Baggins, and when he does, Baggins jumps away. He takes his hand off the box, jumps away, and he says, I should have told you that, and this is why Post isn't dead yet, because although it is very diluted, Baggins touching the box being touched by Post was enough to curse Post Malone.
So wait,
but not enough to kill him.
How hasn't Baggins died? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have an answer to this question.
Well, he takes everything on a horse now.
he's around this stuff all the time. He is so cursed that he's like mega
They
cursed.
All neutralize each
they
other?
They all cancel out. Yeah,
yeah.
Post only has one very weak curse on him, and that's why he almost died in a plane crash. He almost died in a car crash. He almost got shot by an armed robber or was kidnapped or something. I don't know how that was going to work out.
I would have assumed it would have been like an autograph signing or something.
Where's Post Malone? We're here to get your autograph and steal your money. I would do it.
You're great, man. Keep it up. Now give me all your money.
Yeah, keep making money.
He needs to do a collab with Post-it Notes.
Oh, no, that's good. I like that.
You can have them in the shape of his face. And then all your little notes are just more of his tattoos for you.
Hmm. Interesting. I like that.
You're welcome, Post Malone, and Post-it Notes.
I give Post Malone 4 months to live until the curse takes his life.
He's too young.
They all are.
Dang it.
Now, there's one other theory about Post Malone. We're gonna change this. Up until this point, it's technically been a Dybbuk Box episode. We're going to change this to a Post Malone episode. The bad times of Post Malone. So there's another theory as to why he is cursed.
What else did he
This
do?
One was brought up by our good friend Brian Hasty over at the Double Density. This was also in the UFO book club chat. You could have been a part of. You are a part
of it. Sam, I hear some anger.
So Brian came up with an alternative theory.
Okay.
Now, when you walked into the house.
Mm-hmm. Which, this house?
This house.
Okay.
2 hours ago.
Yes.
Hour and 45 oh my God. Minutes. It's yes. It's been a minute. I started playing a Post Malone song. And it is a song that is not on any of his albums. It's on a mixtape that he has on SoundCloud, the August 26th mixtape. And it's
that's
called...
not out yet. Is it? No, is it?
It's just a mixtape.
Oh, okay. No, you're good. You're good.
And it's the album is called, or the song is called Hollywood Dreams. And in it, he not covers, but draws inspiration from Fleetwood Mac's song Dreams. Now, everyone knows that Stevie Nicks is a witch. She has said that she believes in magic.
So,
and she has a magical worldview. So my suggestion here is that Stevie Nicks is no big fan of Austin Post using her greatest hits. One of probably Fleetwood Mac's greatest hit, if not like top two or three, other than Go Your Own Way and Rhiannon, which Rhiannon is also a song about witches, apparently.
I would be flattered.
Well, she wasn't, and she cursed Post Malone.
All right.
And that's what's going on here. That's an acceptable theory as well.
Yeah, when was that mixtape released?
It was like a year or two ago. So
the curse took a little time.
It builds.
Yeah, totally. Thank you. It's like an eruption, you know?
Stevie Nicks is a witch, and I really hope that she does not curse me. But if she does, I just got to say, great fan of your work, and I'm happy to be cursed by Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, and it would make great material for us.
Please, Stevie Nicks. No one else put a curse on me. No one else. Just Stevie Nicks. All right. So that's what I got. This is like a crappy way to end it all. That's what I got. The box.
So the box now resides in a museum.
The box now resides in Zach Bagans' Haunted Museum of Haunts and Horrors.
What's it called?
What, the museum?
Yeah.
Zach Bagans' Haunted Museum. Not of Haunts and Horrors. I wish it was.
Yeah, it's just literally called, that.
Let's just double check this on the Googles. Oh, yeah. Wu-Tang Generator. Your name. Your Wu-Tang name.
Oh, I got rap name. MyRapName.com, ready to rock and roll. I didn't know if that was correct or not. Edge was the top option, so I was like, let's do that.
Well, your Wu-Tang name.
I thought we'd do that in post, like after the show, during the deep.
This is going to be for patrons only.
Yeah.
That you'll learn Jason's sacred Wu-Tang name. Zach Bagans.
Actually, I'll let you do that, so it's a big reveal for me.
Zach Bagans, it's Zach Bagans, The Haunted Museum. That sucks. Take that "the" out of there. It's literally Zach Bagans with the S and then the apostrophe that denotes ownership.
Right.
The Haunted Museum. Just do Zach Bagans Haunted Museum.
But it's the Haunted Museum.
That's like saying Francis Ford Coppola's The Godfather. Instead of just saying like, oh, it's Godfather.
I mean, it's... Oh, sure. What is it? I feel like it's gotta be like the worst looking logo ever.
Oh, does it have a logo?
I'm assuming it has like a sign or
something.
Oh, it's
like an old timey guy who sells you opium wine.
Oh, found Zach. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, he's a very...
He's got a face.
He's got one.
Wait. What was it called again?
Zach Haunted Bagans, Museum. The Haunted Museum. Not Haunted Museum. Don't get it twisted.
Okay.
Oh, you can buy merch.
Let's go back a step. I want to see images.
What the heck? He has a CD called Necrofusion. Why the Zach? Zach Bagans.
It has a... So, gosh, this guy. It is an old-timey picture of him.
Yeah. No, but I just mean like the font. It looks like...
Oh, it
would be
sweet.
On a traveling like snake oil salesman cart.
You know, it's designed that way for a reason, probably.
Yeah. You can also buy his book, I Am Haunted. Here's the thing. His book, I Am Haunted, costs $26. That's a lot for a book.
He's haunted by cash.
Yeah.
He's very much in the black.
Now, some of our people, friends, family members, loved ones.
Postie.
posting have gone to the Zach Braggins The Haunted Museum.
Have they?
And they've had a wonderful time. Everybody that has mentioned it, because people on like the Facebook group or like have emailed me saying like, oh yeah, I went to the Zach, it was very good. I was like, oh cool. And like,
I don't know,
some people
about this guy.
I know. Some people have been in the same room as the box. I don't know if Baggins allows you to touch it. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but you can go in and see it. And if you're ever in Vegas, I mean, you should. I think I don't ever see myself going to Las Vegas, but if I do, I'll go there. That sounds like a good time.
It's a smaller, like, actual museum than I was thinking. It's like an actual, like, just a renovated house. It's very different than I thought it would be.
It won Best of Las Vegas. That's a pretty big thing.
I mean,
for Las Vegas,
it's a cool place. I would never have been like, oh, that place is a haunted museum.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, look at it. It's
yeah, it just lovely. Looks like a house.
It looks like
a
an
lovely
Olive Garden.
House, but a house nonetheless. It looks like an Olive Garden. That's why Post Malone wins.
Yeah, that's he's like free
he was
breadsticks.
Confused.
Free breadsticks, my man.
So that's the Dybbuk box.
I'm not gonna lie, Sam. I don't feel
scared for your life.
Scared? I don't feel like it's. I don't feel complete.
What do you mean?
You know, I don't feel like.
Because it's still out there?
I don't feel good closure, you know? Like, usually when we wrap up an episode, there's some sort of feeling of closure.
That's fair.
This is just like, oh, well, now it's just...
It's out there,
it's
yeah.
It's in a room somewhere.
Yeah, who knows?
We know exactly actually
Maybe
where it is.
Maybe we'll do a part two where the box kills Zach Baggins and then makes a run for it or something. I don't know.
What is this, Beauty and the Beast?
yeah, it's interesting because almost all of our episodes take place exclusively in the past,
right?
This is
one, like,
is still
now ish mm. It's weird. Okay,
let's take a road trip.
Sure, man, as long as we get to vlog it all.
Oh yeah, we're gonna do that.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, crap.
Eventually.
Yeah, I gotta clean out the spare room first.
Let me know.
Okay,
give me a day.
All right.
We'll make it happen.
Huh. Baron keeps pooping in there. He's the worst. Anyway. Yeah.
I guess that's
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's it. It does.
Man.
It feels a little weird. I
Doesn't
agree.
It? Well, hopefully no one else is feeling as weird as we are.
I think we may have lost some people halfway, three-fourths of the way through when we started talking about Post Malone.
That's fine.
So if you're still here, like, thank you. Hello. You're my favorite people.
So Sam, okay, you better cut that out.
Okay,
what
I'm
else?
Making an ASMR tape.
What else do we need to knock out? Anything else we need to talk about today?
We would like to thank.
There we go.
One new patron that we have.
Yes,
Keen Dilemma.
Woo!
Keen. We really appreciate everyone who contributes to the show. You can learn more about doing that at patreon.com/notalonepodcast. Get early access to the uncut episodes and to help us keep the lights on. Right now, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lights and a candle. That's basically 6 lights on. And it's all because of you. So thank you all so much.
We do have way too many lights on. Like, it's still sunny out. Why why are we wasting this much energy?
You know,
what are you doing?
Probably because we're the worst, I would think. Beyond that, we also would like to thank some lovely people who left us reviews. Let me take a look here. So.
Also, real quick, update. Amanda, which has just posted on last week's episode post on Facebook. Zach is actually going to be doing a live box opening for Halloween.
Oh,
so
wow.
You might
tune into that. Is it going to be streamed?
I have no idea.
Huh.
She's not watching it, apparently, but she has informed all of us. So that might be a thing. You might want to do that. I probably won't care that much.
Wow. I'll watch it. I will.
Do it.
So we would like to thank, we actually got a few reviews. We'd like to thank Kifabe Dad. All right. I know you in real life. Hello. Thank you.
Oh, God.
We'd like to thank C. Zare. We'd like to thank JDLG717. We'd like to thank D-Moon 1992. We'd like to thank Bartleby the Listener. That's like a freaking D&D bard name. That's wonderful. And we'd like to thank Crispy843. We would not like to thank Smith Cindy, who said that unfortunately we are too busy trying to be comedians that we could not even articulate the story.
That's fine.
Okay, Smith Cindy, you're probably right. I'd like to go ahead and read Crispy843's. They say, it's good. No, it's great. But great as in like great, because it's capitalized and there's extra letters. To first start off, I didn't know podcasts were a thing until about a month ago.
Wow. Tell me about it.
That's a wild ride you've been on, my friend. My wife introduced me to Dr. Death on a long drive to Virginia. I don't know what that means, but I hope you're okay.
Nice.
I thought, wow, these stories give you a crazy mental image. Now, being a believer of supernatural UFO phenomena because of multiple personal experiences, my curiosity quickly turned to me searching for supernatural podcasts. Not Alone was among one of the first few I had subscribed to listen to on my free time. Long story short, within 3 weeks, I've listened to all 80 episodes. Oh my God.
Dude, whoa.
I'm so sorry. You must have just an overload of my voice in your head. I hope you don't see me in your dreams at this point. And I am deeply saddened. I can no longer binge on my long work days or playing Xbox, hunting monsters on Monster Hunter on the weekends while listening to supernatural monsters. That's like a monster trifecta. The podcast is absolutely amazing. It gives the imagination a wild ride. Sam and Jason, if you ever visit Myrtle Beach, let a fan know. Drinks are on me, and I'd love to tell you my personal experiences. The good news is, Crispy843, you can still send those personal experiences in to notalonepodstories@gmail.com.
Ooh, man, I see what you did there.
Boom, brought it around.
Well done.
I'm not going to cut those off until like at least Sunday, probably. We'll see. Just send them all in. Anyway, thank you. That's awesome. I do that with podcasts. Like, for instance, the McElroy brothers, I've listened to like, I don't know, 100 hours of them in the last month. So like, they're like my best friends now. So this must be how he feels about us. And let me tell you,
it's still so bizarre.
You are our best friend, Chris, and we are your best friend. And through the transitive power of math, Austin Post is now your very good friend as well. So, boom, that's what you get for being a listener. Guys, thank you all. Thanks to everyone who supports us week after week. Leave reviews if you can. It's great. Become a patron if you can. That's fun. If all else fails, support our sponsors. That's a wonderful way of doing it. There's a sponsor this episode. I forget who it is. Just, it will have happened. Like, you will have heard an advertisement. Act upon it. Other than that, just tell a friend and hold hands and everything's gonna be all right, and don't worry, be happy. Play us out, Jason. No, I'll play us out. You say the thing.
Remember, whether you're buying a spooky box online or opening it up for the first time on Halloween, you are
not alone.